Welcome to Shades of Green, Austin's live green talk radio show with your hosts John Hoffner, Reed Sternberg, and Stacy Gibry.
We are live each Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m. here on KOOP Hornsby, Austin, 91.7 FM and streaming live at koop.org. Join us on Facebook or you can check out podcasts or previous shows online at shadesofgreenmedia.com.
The views expressed here are not necessarily the views of KOOP Radio, its board of directors, volunteers, staff, or underwriters. Shades of Green. We are back for another show this Thursday today. John Hoffner, Stacy Gidry, and Amy Stansbury here today. We're missing Reed. We understand he's having fun somewhere.
He's working the slots in Vegas.
Yeah, well, let's hope he brings
not
us back
not nearly
some
as
money.
Much fun as being here at the radio.
Solar for people, not for profit.
That's
and
right.
Also radio for people, not for profit. And welcome, everybody. We have a pretty hot topic, let's say, or interesting topic. And maybe Amy, you'll introduce what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, today we're going to be talking about Prop 1 and the election that we just had. Early voting just ended, and now we have the election coming up here on Saturday, May 7th. And this is the election about ride-hailing apps like Uber and Lyft. Hopefully, if you're not living under a rock, you've heard a little bit about this. And so today we've got a whole hour to talk about it. We've got some great guests in the studio to give us a little bit more information and kind of take a deep dive into the issue ahead of the election. We have Laura Morrison here. She is a former city council member, and she's a volunteer and spokesperson with Our City, Our Safety, Our Choice. We also have Roy Whaley. He's the conservation chair of the Sierra Club. And we also have Huey Ray Fisher. He is the deputy outreach director for Ride Sharing Works for Austin. So we got a great lineup ahead.
Well, let's get into our deep dive here. We're talking about the ride share issue here in Austin. Just want to remind folks that Election Day is this Saturday, May 7th. So if you haven't gotten to the polls and you're eligible to vote and you're registered, make sure that you get out to the polls and cast your ballot and fulfill your civic duty.
Yes, and the ID rule is still in play,
yep,
right?
Yep. Texas has a voter ID law, so it's important that you bring your identification. You can go to votetexas.gov, or is it .org?
Both work.
Both work? Okay. Yeah, and you can find out which IDs are accepted at those polling locations for sure. But I want to introduce our guests. We have Huey Ray Fisher with Ride Sharing Works for Austin. We also have Roy Whaley here with Austin Sierra Club and former council member Laura Morrison with the
Our City, Our Safety, Our Choice.
I didn't want to butcher it. So thank you, Amy. She has it written down. So first, just want to go over just a little bit of your background, 30 to 45 seconds of how you've gotten here.
Your journey.
Go, Huey.
Sure. My name is Huey Ray Fisher. I moved to Austin 5 years ago to attend the University of Texas. Fell in love with this community. It's different from the small conservative town that I come from. Over the past few years, I was an environmental policy analyst over at the Capitol, most recently working for State Rep. Eddie Rodriguez. And then I recently just ran for state representative as a leftist candidate. And now I'm deputy outreach director for Ride Sharing Works for Austin PAC, because I really care about this issue. It's something that impacts me and my friends deeply.
Well, great. Welcome back, Huey. Yeah, we had a radio show on all the HD 49 candidates and the commissioner candidates in Precinct 1.
That was a packed day.
That was a packed day. But yeah, Huey was a big part of that. Yeah, yes. It was standing room only. So next we have Roy Whaley with Austin Sierra Club. Hey, Roy.
Hi. I'm the conservation chair for the Austin Regional Group of the Sierra Club. The Sierra Club, of course, is the oldest environmental organization in America and the world.
Really?
And we have a lot of impact on national policy. And then we have our state chapter, which is the Lone Star chapter. And then we have our subgroups like the Austin Regional Group and also Dallas, San Antonio, Houston, the Coastal Bend, et cetera. And I'm a native of Central Texas and have always been an environmentalist.
A frequent resident of City Hall, right? Always there. Roy is always at City
always
Council meetings.
Roy.
I know. I need to get a life. I agree.
Well, you need to.
He's
bring
committed.
Him to,
well,
yeah.
We're thankful
yeah,
this
bring,
is your life.
Bring him to some of those training classes that you're trying to get.
I know. Roy is an expert, and he. I do a lot with the young Sierrans, and Roy is always at the meetings to try and he always tries to pretend like he is also a young Sierran.
Some places you just don't fit in, Roy.
No, but he's very helpful. You know, he really tries to give that information and education and share some of his knowledge and experience for how to get involved, because he knows how to do it.
Got to pass it along.
Exactly.
And finally, we have a council member or former council member, Laura Morrison here. Welcome. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. It's great to be here. And I have to start by saying Roy is young at heart. And as a council member, I can tell you that every time it might be 11 p.m., every time Roy got up, everybody perked up because we knew that we were going to have something not only entertaining, but extremely informative. So I served two terms on the Austin City Council. I've lived in Austin for a long, long time. Before being on council, I was an engineer. I was a consultant. I was in public health. Finally got very involved in a lot of community issues and thought, well, you know what, heck, I think I'd like to be making the decisions instead of asking other people to do the right thing. So I ran and served two terms and have been off for a little over a year now. And since then, I did a lot of recuperating. It's hard work. But also, I'm serving on a few boards. I'm on the Housing Works Board, on the ECHO, which is the Homeless Coalition Board, on a Austin Film Society Community Advisory Committee, and things like that. And I hadn't really been too public about much of anything since I got off council. But when this campaign arose and I was contacted by folks that were bringing the community together to work against it, I said, yeah, that is a righteous issue and I need to be involved and I need to come out from behind my rock.
Okay. Great. Well, again, thanks for being here to all of you. So I really want to, for those people who were hiding under a rock and don't really understand the Uber Lyft, the ride sharing kind of background on this issue, Amy, do you want to talk
I'll
a little
give
bit about
the brief sort of recap? And so for people who might not remember, I believe it was in 2014, we started to have some of these ride hailing apps like Uber and Lyft come into Austin. And the city council at the time, which is different from the one we have now, sort of passed some regulations around it and permitting basically the apps to work in Austin. And then about a year later, you know, about it was in 2015 with our new city council, they kind of looked at these rules again and proposed new ones, the main one being fingerprint-based background checks for their riders. And so just as a differentiation...
For the
drivers,
okay.
Right.
Oh, you said riders, so I just want to make sure. Yeah,
sorry,
for the drivers.
Drivers, yes.
For That's the a drivers. Whole other nest.
For the drivers, yes, sorry. And so just to be clear, Uber and Lyft both, they already conduct background checks on all of their drivers. But this issue would be this, you know, the proposal, the idea of their new resolution would be to add fingerprint-based background checks as an extra safety precaution. That was City Council's reasoning. And so they did pass that regulation. And then in response, you had Ride Sharing Works for Austin Political Action Committee kind of got together and raised a whole bunch of signatures in order to get this issue on the ballot. And so that's where we are now. And so we have, that's what the election is on May 7th. And as a reminder, we have, if you're voting for Prop 1, that's the Ride Sharing Works for Austin folks. And that sort of is asking for a return to the original rules that were passed back in 2014.
Without fingerprinting.
That's the big difference. And then, I mean, there are some other differences, yes, but that's the main one. And then a vote against is sort of a vote for the newest round of regulations that the latest city council passed. It's very confusing, and that's why we wanted to have a show today. That's why you've probably seen a lot of ads and a lot of things on Facebook.
Coming in through your mail.
Exactly.
As well.
All kinds of things, because there is a lot of confusion and people are curious about it. And obviously, it's an issue that has touched a lot of people. I will have to say I've just seen way more people aware of this election than in other elections past. So definitely a hot button issue.
Well, if folks are following along in Travis County with Bruce Alphonse's Facebook page, he is reporting daily totals about people who are getting out to vote. And I mean, it's higher than city council elections. I mean, and people are really concerned about this, and they do want to have a say. So I think it's great for civic engagement. And I'm glad that we've got both sides of the coin here on this issue. So just want to talk real quick about, you know, the we'll go with Huey, sure. who is a proponent of the Prop 1. Why don't you give us kind of a basic breakdown of why Prop 1 feels the way it does?
Yeah, I first came out in support of Prop 1 because we need to reinstate the rules passed by the 2014 council. It keeps ride-sharing safe. It keeps it secure. That's why so many young people and students depend on apps such as Uber and Lyft to get around safely at night. It's completely changed our culture. It's reduced DWIs. And it's been a service that has really been a benefit for the community. And in another respect, it's created over 10,000 jobs for Austinites to help them make ends meet, which is something that we can't ignore. I care more about the good public policies in this debate than the petty politics. You know, there's going to be a lot of discussion about how much money each side is spending, about, you know, advertisements that are being thrown out there. But ultimately, when you look at what's on the ballot and what Proposition 1 actually does, when I look at it objectively and I see what materially comes as a result of supporting Prop 1, it makes sense.
Huey, can you break down for us what are those regulations that basically, if you were to vote for Prop 1, what would remain in effect? What would we have regulating those companies?
So it's not a conversation between regulation versus non-regulation.
Right.
It's a conversation between two different types of regulations. And what we would have with Prop 1 are comprehensive, modern, and efficient background checks that are audited by the City Transportation Department, that are done by an accredited third party. They use your social security, your address, your name, your vehicle information to look through all 50 states and sex offender registries and the terrorism watch list. And then you'd have other standard regulations that were in place back in 2014. It repeals the fingerprinting requirement, which has a whole slew of problems that I'm sure we'll get into in the next few minutes. It does remove the emblem requirement, which I would love to talk about in the next few minutes also. And it also removes stopping in a transit lane requirement. The ballot language is very misleading. It tells voters what they're repealing, but doesn't actually explain what's being reinstated. And that's frustrating because when a voter comes in and looks at the ballot, they'll see what we're taking away, but they won't know that we're still putting in place very strong and safe regulations that that do matter.
And so, Laura, I want to bring you in now. I'm going to kind of pose the same question to you. What, if you're voting against Prop 1, what are you in essence voting for? What regulations are you in support of?
Sure. If you're voting against Prop 1, what you're doing is saying, I want to keep the current law in place. And the current law requires that that any driver have a fingerprint background check, which is a superior background check in terms of trying to determine if there have been prior convictions, any criminal convictions. So there also, you would also keep the restriction from stopping in traffic lanes when you're dropping and picking up passengers. And I want to say that this is not about whether you like Uber and Lyft. This is about what the proper safety regulations are. And, you know, as we've said, often Houston and New York have fingerprint background checks. DPS recommends them. Law enforcement recommends them. So it's really a higher standard that I think that people of Austin deserve.
Taxi drivers in Austin currently are fingerprinted?
Not only are taxi drivers fingerprinted, but also pedicab drivers and limo drivers. Everybody else is fingerprinted, so it really makes sense to have the same standards for everybody else.
And what about, I know emblem is also the one other main piece. Can you describe that?
Right. Currently, there's a requirement in the law that Prop 1 seeks to repeal that requires that there be an emblem so that you've identified the car as an Uber or Lyft car. And I do want to correct a couple of things that I heard. Number one, the audit in the ordinance that Prop 1 has proposed is not a City of Austin audit. It's a third-party audit. And so the Transportation Department does not do the audit. And that's something we can talk about later because Uber and Lyft have been very, very critical of sharing any of their information, not even wanting to have the city see it.
Let's start with fingerprinting. So I'll kind of, again, go back and forth. Huey, can you start off? Why do these companies not want fingerprinting? What is the main concern?
Yeah, absolutely. There are several issues with it. First off, there's no empirical evidence that supports saying that it's superior to the background checks that Uber and Lyft currently undergo. Because Uber and Lyft currently undergo a very comprehensive background check that goes into all 50 states, as I mentioned earlier, checks sex offender registries, checks the terrorism watch list, and that does keep us safe. Fingerprinting is known to be a discriminatory practice. That's why the NAACP came out with a letter saying that it's not a practice that should be supported or mandated.
Why is it discriminatory?
Because it only looks at arrests rather than final convictions. So then when we start looking at over-policed communities, especially black and brown bodies, they're the ones who would disproportionately be pushed off or disincentivized to sign on as drivers. The reason Uber and Lyft are big time against it, it is because they're corporations. They are corporations out to make money. My job's not to defend corporations, or for that sake, I care more about the public policy aspect. But here's the reality. Where they're mandated in Houston and New York, in Houston, Lyft left, and it's the fourth largest city in the United States. Uber stayed, and right now they have surge pricing going through the roof. They have wait times going through the roof because they can't get enough drivers out there to meet demand. Because for Uber and Lyft, many of the drivers who sign on do it as either temporary work or as a part-time gig. And by not being able to meet demand, that's what effectively hurts them.
So is the fear then that fingerprinting takes too much time?
Not only too much time, because it has been made more efficient in recent years, but the fact that it's just an extra impediment that does deter people from signing on to the app to be drivers when they'll just find another line of work to make ends meet between jobs or whatnot.
Well, would drivers have to go to a physical location?
They'd have to go to a physical location to
which
go get their
fingerprint.
Which they do not have to do now.
So that's the big difference.
And it's a huge difference. And that's what we see playing out in Houston right now. And that's why that's why Uber and Lyft are so fundamentally opposed to it, not just because it's discriminatory, but it does hurt their bottom line. It's not the actual cost of the fingerprint-based background checks. We just blew $8 million on this election. Those $8 million would have covered the cost of the checks. It's the fact that they won't be able to meet demand, and this is a policy that's being pushed by the taxi cab lobby all across the United States. Go to whosdrivingyou.org, scroll down to the bottom, and it's paid for by the taxi lobby of America.
Okay. Aren't there some taxi cab drivers that have not been able to pass that check that... From a flyer or a mailer that I got in the mail, there was a 50-something people that were taxi cab drivers previously that tried to be Uber or Lyft
and
drivers
and
they didn't pass.
They were audited and one third were found to not actually pass Uber and Lyft's background check system. And what's even more reprehensible is the fact that City Council just barely a month ago or a month and a half ago made the requirement for fingerprinting to be national rather than just statewide, which it just doesn't make sense at the end of the day.
So that means checking arrest records.
Arrest records and final convictions.
Okay, so now I'm going to bring in Laura to talk about the same thing. So what is the other side of the coin there as far as what are the benefits of fingerprinting and why do some people feel like it's not that Uber and Lyft are sort of conflating their fear about it hurting their business?
Right. Thanks for letting me have the opportunity because it's simple. A fingerprint background check is the only way to confirm the person that's being checked is the person that they say is being checked. So in Houston, for instance, when they went from just doing the background checks that Uber and Lyft were doing to the fingerprint background checks, they found the most egregious situation was they found someone that was using 24 aliases that had passed the Uber check. 24 aliases, 5 birth dates, 10 social security numbers, and they had an open arrest warrant for them. So that's why people recommend it. There is evidence. There's a lot of what Huey just said that I need to respond to. There is evidence, and I'll go through it because I was taking notes.
So the fear is, just to talk on that real quick, the fear is that if someone submits their social security number and other information to companies like Uber and Lyft to get background checked, it's not that they might have stolen that information, that that's not really who they were, are. Is that sort of the main argument for the fingerprint?
That's exactly what can happen, and that's exactly what does happen. For instance, in California, you may have read that there was a lawsuit. The San Francisco and the Los Angeles prosecutors filed suit against Uber and Lyft for exaggerating their claims of safety. And there was a settlement that came out of that, and Uber can no longer say that they're the safest, et cetera, et cetera. There are 12 things they're not allowed to say. But in the process of doing that lawsuit, they were again allowed to, able to look at drivers that had passed the Uber check and then did fingerprinting. And so you can the examples I like to give are they found one guy that had been approved by Uber who was a convicted murderer and had used an alias and hadn't been caught because of that. And the other example is that the there was a convicted someone convicted of kidnapping, and the reason he failed, he had passed Uber but didn't pass the fingerprint background check, of course, because it was in the FBI database. Was that Uber did not check Los Angeles. So when they say that it's a national background check, number one, they check sort of where they think that person might have lived based on their credit report and their social security. And number two, Mayor Turner in Houston recently said that in fact that the fingerprint the Uber background checks don't check four different states. So according to Mayor Turner, it's really only 46 states.
And can I ask real quick, I know that a lot of times, you know, I see this in ads on both sides, you know, people kind of point to this one extreme example. And I think sometimes people might be wondering, okay, I see that, I see that maybe this bad thing went wrong once. Is there any information to back up that that's happened many, you know, that this is a widespread problem and not just like one news story, that freak accident kind of thing?
Yeah, I think the thing that you can refer to are the accuracy numbers. And that would be that fingerprint background checks are 99.3% accurate in terms of determining who the person is, and this was a study done by the DOJ, using only names, there was an 88 or 82, depending on how you count it, percent accuracy. So even if it's 88, that means they're missing one in 10.
Determining who they are, though, not necessarily finding if they have been convicted of criminal behavior.
That's correct. Okay. That's correct. So if you want to be able to find whether or not people are criminals, and you don't want to be missing one out of 10 of those people, the numbers would tell you that.
Just one clarification I could ask. Is it's not Uber and Lyft that do the actual background checks, right? It's a third party that they send all the information out.
They do.
It's a commercial endeavor. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is.
And you had another point there, Laura.
Or maybe Roy should pop in.
I'll let Roy.
We haven't
had Roy come in yet.
He has been unusually quiet.
Not a way to get a word in edgewise. But yes, I'm glad that Laura pointed out the things that she did. Also, I have to say that the horrible burden of having to go and get fingerprinted is something I had to endure all those years ago as a realtor. It's required that I have my fingerprinting done and the background check done. And that 20 minutes that I lost out of my life 10, 12, 15 years ago, whatever it was, it's 20 minutes I will never get back. It's just not that big of a deal. It's just not that big of a deal. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I know the mayor back before we brought it to election was kind of looking to see if there was a compromise on this, if there was some way that we could kind of do both, figure out a quicker way to get people fingerprinted. Maybe Huey might know, have these companies looked into, or has anyone been looking into, is there a way to maybe make the fingerprinting process more efficient? Or on the other side as well, I mean, have people started thinking, okay, you know, on our cell phones, we already have something that scans our fingerprint. I don't know, is there a way, have people been thinking of this or toying with an idea?
And I want to add to that question, why did the companies pull back on the compromise?
They didn't necessarily pull back. There is pulling back from both sides. But to answer Amy's question specifically, no, if there are ways to make it a lot more efficient, to make it convenient so that way there isn't a driver reduction, then it should absolutely be pursued. I can't speak on behalf of Uber or Lyft. I speak on behalf of RWA. But what's really important is that when fingerprinting is made mandatory, there's a reduction in drivers. And there's a reduction in drivers because, unlike getting a real estate license, driving for Uber and Lyft is meant to be a part-time gig. When I lost my election on March 1st, I had to pay rent and student loan bills that month. I'm not an affluent attorney like one of my six opponents, like all of my six opponents. Not to hate on attorneys, my dad's one, and I love my dad if you're listening. But what's important is I needed to pay rent and a bill that month. So I drove for Uber, I drove for Lyft, during South by Southwest, and I made ends meet. And that's critical here. It's, you know, fingerprinting would have been a disincentive. I would have just found another way to make money, and that ends up hurting the consumers. And the consumers here are who matter. We need to make sure they have a safe ride home. Why would they ever get into the car with a stranger if they didn't believe that it was safe? And it's not the ordinance that necessarily drives them to believe that it's safe. It's all of the other safety features within the technologies that give them the peace of mind to get into a car with somebody they don't know.
And this is the tracking on the phone.
It's right? A lot of things. Before you get in the car, you have the photo, the name, the vehicle information of your ride. During the ride, you have a GPS tracked ride. So God forbid if anything happens, you have a records turnover to the police. Also during the ride, you can send an ETA to a friend so they can track your ride as well. And then after the ride, say nothing went wrong, but the driver was giving you uncomfortable looks through the back rearview mirror and saying things like, look at that skirt on you. You can give them a 1-star rating. You can report it.
I'm
and
used
it can
to people
be
saying
out.
That to me.
and those are all safety features on top of the strong ordinances passed in 2014 that are why young people and students have depended, not just, you know, conveniently used, but depended on Ubers and Lyfts to get them home safely at night.
I want to bring Roy in real quick. I saw him, but and then after that, I want to move on to the emblem issue. So, Roy, okay. Why don't you
I want to
sum
clarify something. I really want to make this clear about Austin Sierra Club's position on this.
And just say, the Sierra Club has officially endorsed a no vote, correct?
Yes, and we absolutely support TNCs. We absolutely support the drivers. We absolutely support the users. We don't want to lose the service. We support all of this. For us, it comes down to protecting the ordinances we have in place that are environmental protections, that protect our East Side Creek setbacks, that protect Barton Springs and the SOS ordinance. If you love Barton Springs, you love hanging out at Barton Springs, you're going to love regulation.
So what I think you're hitting on a hot spot that is kind of overarching all of this is it's the process that, mm-hmm. that maybe the Sierra Club doesn't like. That here a corporately funded PAC has maybe the word is not co-opted but taken over the democratic process or interjected into the democratic process and said, well, we can change things by getting enough votes. And so maybe is that your,
yes,
that's kind of the
I'm
position
sure that
you're
we'll
taking.
Talk about that later, yeah. But I just wanted to put that in there that we support the users. Mm-hmm. We support the drivers. My daughter lives in Denver. She depends on Lyft in Denver, as do many of her friends, and many of her friends that stopped driving for Lyft and Uber because they cut the rates there, mm-hmm. and they can't make ends meet off of this part-time job.
Yes. And we're going to take a quick break now, but then we'll get back to that, some of this sort of the emblem issue and then also some of this overarching money and politics issue. So we'll be back after this break. We're back with Shades of Green on Co-op 91.7 FM. We're talking about Prop 1 and the election on Saturday, May 7th. As a reminder, we've got quite a few guests in the studio with us today. We have Laura Morrison, who's a volunteer and spokesperson with Our City, Our Safety, Our Choice. We have Roy Whaley, who's the conservation chair of the Sierra Club. And we have Huey Ray Fisher, who's the deputy outreach director of Ride Sharing Works for Austin. And right before the break, we were talking a little bit about one of the sort of overarching issues that sort of made its way into this election, which is the role of money in politics. And so, as a reminder, the campaign finance reports came out last week, and the totals as of now, we have $8 million spent by Ride Sharing Works for Austin, or collected by Ride Sharing Works for Austin, mostly from Uber and Lyft, spent on, you know, the campaign efforts, and then about $100,000 from Our City, Our Safety, Our Choice. And so one of the big things, and I think this is what Roy was talking about before, and why the Sierra groups like the Sierra Club have decided to get involved on an issue that they maybe might necessarily, it's not totally a natural fit for them, is that, or people might not think it is, right, is that it sort of speaks to an issue of money in politics. And so, Roy, do you want to kind of chime in a little bit more about why? You mentioned before, if you care about all these other issues, you should care about this. What connection is the Sierra Club making? Why does it matter? You know,
because when a corporation, which is not a person, by the way, can come in and write their own ordinance, then our democracy is at risk. This isn't the Capitol. This isn't Washington, D.C. This is local politics, where people should have the most impact on what happens in their local lives. But we're sliding into corporations being able to write their own rules. When we look at the entities that are supporting the Uber position, Real Estate Council of Austin is there. Now, the Real Estate Council of Austin, they're commercial focused. And so if they see that, they can come in and overturn our heritage tree ordinance because trees get in the way.
So the fear is that it would be precedent setting.
Absolutely.
Well, Didn't they follow the process? If they had a grievance to overturn the ordinance, didn't they follow the process? They gathered the signatures, it on the ballot.
Why can't RICA go ahead and pay to get their AstroTurf grassroots campaign started to get the petition signed? Because believe me, they would love to overturn the SOS ordinance. Okay, they don't care about the purity of Barton Springs. They are looking east. They would love to get rid of the creek setback protection ordinances in East Austin.
So let's bring in Huey here.
He's going to have a fit.
Right? Yeah. Oh, boy.
I'm sure.
Oh, boy.
And so,
them fighting words, apparently.
What's sort of the counter argument to that? Of course, we know that a lot of money has been raised. I'm sure a lot of people have been asking you about this. What do you say to them?
So money in politics is disgusting. It's disgusting that Uber and Lyft have spent over $8 million in this election. But let's note that there's a reason they're spending it. It's to be able to continue to operate in Austin, because if Prop 1 fails, the ordinances passed by the 2016 council have the effect. It's not explicit, but do have the effect of pushing them out. Now, to
wouldn't that be a business decision, though?
It would be a business decision based on the fact that they won't be able to get enough drivers out there to meet demand. It is totally a business decision. The reason I'm supporting Prop 1 is because it's good public policy that not only keeps us safe but also continues ride sharing in our community. But to address Roy's concerns, Austin is a very smart community. It's a very well-educated electorate. We're not going to be fooled, just because a corporate
$8 million.
We're not going to be fooled by any corporation that just comes in and tries to push us around. We care about good public policies over the petty politics of it all. So no, there's never going to be an effort that will effectively overturn the SOS ordinance, because Austinites would never support it. The reason why 65,000 Austinites signed that petition, and the reason I'm in this campaign, is because Prop 1 is good public policy. It is in the public's interest. It's not a malicious attempt that is similar to overturning an SOS ordinance. That's what's so frustrating about this debate. Yes, the money in politics, you know, is an issue that needs to be addressed. And we need to start talking about serious ethics laws down the road. We need to talk about reforming lobby laws so that way Yellow Cab isn't coming in and lobbying City Hall and then also having a ton of lobbyists at the legislature.
It's a good point. Let's bring in Laura, though, here. And I know that one of the big complaints on the other side has been that this money has kind of led to sort of some misleading campaign advertisements and things like that. Do you want to talk about?
I would love to talk about that. And I think you're being kind when you say that the $8 million has led to some sort of misleading. And, you know, the media has done a really good job of trying to play what I call whack-a-mole, because they make these claims and then they're debunked. And then they make another one and then it's debunked. And they have been called, and I quote, pants on fire, wildly misleading, outright false. You know, it goes on and on and on. And I think that it's appalling that there's been $8 million spent to fill people's mailboxes with things that have already been said to be not true. In fact, in the newspaper today, there's another one that says the city is going to have to pay for the fingerprint checks. That is false. PolitiFact said that is false, and I think it's an insult to the people of Austin.
Who will be paying for them? I know that's a one that I've seen on a lot of campaign advertisements.
That's right, and it's a real shame that they keep saying that, and it is not the city. The corporations will be paying for it. There's a fee that they're charged, and that will cover it.
Then who operates the fingerprint check? Is that the city then? And then that Uber and Lyft would have to pay the city, or how would that work?
There will be fees to...
Or has it not been decided yet?
That hasn't been decided. It's all open, and it's not going to be on... But it's not going to be on the taxpayers' back. That's the bottom line. And the city can do a third party if they need, but it's something in the ordinance in September, in December, that is going to be phased in so it can be worked out. And I just want to say that I think we really need to look at what's been discussed as the real reason Uber and Lyft are putting up such a fight here in Austin, Texas, because they do it in New York City. They're not threatening to leave New York City. They do it in Houston.
They do it by meaning the fingerprint
background checks. They do it in Houston. They said it takes 4 months for a permit to come through, and that is not true. The mayor has said that it's much, much less than that. The reason that they're doing it is because they are under the gun. In fact, they just made a $100 million settlement with drivers as to whether they were sued over the issue of whether they were independent contractors or employees. Now, if they were employees, they would have to get minimum wage. They would have to have benefits. Mm-hmm. Uber does not want to do that. That changes their business model. So the idea that I've read is that the concern on their part is that the more regulation that they have to impose on their folks, including fingerprint, the harder it makes them making the argument to call them independent contractors.
And one thing, too, I think that maybe places like New York City, I think, and maybe Roy, you want to step in here, Austin, just taking a step back from all of the little pieces of it, Austin does have a transportation problem. And so I think that when you have a company that comes in like Uber and Lyft that's providing an actually effective service for users that they enjoy, is that something that, you know, different environmental organizations the city are looking at? Is that obviously there's a reason people feel so protective of these services, is because for now they finally feel like they have a service they can use. Is there action among the environmental community or among City Hall? Like, what can we do then to provide a good public transportation service? You know, what can we do to improve our taxi services or improve our pedicab or improve our, you know, buses services so that the city doesn't feel like they have to be under the gun, so to speak, by Uber and Lyft?
Right. Well, I'll be glad to come back and participate in that discussion. Because that's going to be a long discussion. Yep. Absolutely. We have a transit problem. We need to talk about moving people and not moving cars. We need to stop talking about putting people in cars and moving them around and have an effective transit system that works. And that's what we need to work on. Austin Sierra Club has just taken a position on that, and we'll be putting out a statement on that soon.
Great.
So what is their position on this the concept of Uber and Lyft?
TNCs, we don't have a problem with TNCs, and we don't get into the personalities of the CEOs, etc. But you can go to AmericanProspect.org, the winter edition online, and read a great article about Uber and how they've been treating the drivers in Seattle and San Francisco, et cetera. They have not changed their pay scale here in Austin. So it's easy to get all of the drivers to spend their time doing this because they haven't been affected yet. In Denver, people are flocking away from being drivers because their fees have been cut. And they Huey, can't with, make any money.
With Uber and Lyft, I know a lot of people might ask, you know, why is this even an environmental issue anyway? Yeah. Why are we talking about it on the show? From your perspective, why is this something you care about as it pertains to the environment? What's their role in sort of a larger transportation system that might be effective for the environment?
Absolutely. And to preface that, you know, whether we're talking about labor issues, whether we're talking about environmental concerns, Councilmember Morrison said it at the beginning, you know, this isn't about whether you like Uber and Lyft. We should be voting directly on what the merits and weaknesses are of Prop 1, of the actual ballot language. Now, to talk about some environmental benefits of using transportation network companies, you know, Uber, Lyft, Lyft has Lyft Line, Uber has Uber Pool, and that's true ride sharing, that's true carpooling, where as you're going along with your friend from point A and point B, Councilmember Morrison's laughing because she's never actually taken an Uber or Lyft, but
that's not why I'm laughing. I'm laughing because you're calling it true ride sharing because they're still paying.
It is carpooling though, because when you use a Lyft, when you use a Lyft Line or an Uber Pool, you're getting from a point A to point B, and along the route, you're picking up somebody to take them from point C to point D. So you do have a reduction in vehicles there. City Lab came out with an article recently talking about how Ubers and Lyfts have helped bridge the gaps where public transit, you know, doesn't necessarily make it. Whether it's replacing park and rides, or whether it's servicing passengers at night when rides on public transit are either infrequent or just not happening. So there's really a reason why I'll go downtown to, you know, mm-hmm. 6th Street in a Cap Metro bus, but then at 2 in the morning, the way I'm going to get home is, you know, hailing a Lyft.
Really quick, I know we're running short on time, but I want to touch on the emblem thing really quickly.
Can I just reply to
Sir Laura, reply real quick, and then go right into the emblem.
Okay? I just want to point out an article that was written and posted on the Sierra, National Sierra Club, and it really raises some questions that we all need to think about, because the fact of the matter is they've started doing some studies, and while it makes sense to think that taking a ride with Uber or Lyft is going to help with congestion, in fact, with so many cars on the road circling around looking for a ride, it has in fact impacted congestion. And in New York City, they did a study and found that due to those cars, speeds had been reduced by 8%. The other thing that we really need to think about is there have been some surveys done that say that that show that people that are taking Uber and Lyft, if in some cities, say for instance in San Francisco, if they hadn't been taking Uber and Lyft, half those people in the survey would have either walked, biked, or taken public transportation. So it's diverting public transportation passengers, which can be a threat to public transportation.
I
think with all of these issues, obviously, since Uber and Lyft are both new technologies, there's a lot of studies coming out. I see different things all the time. I think that as a lot more studies need to be done, it seems like there's a lot more work to be done.
I agree with that. But we also have to recall that if Uber and Lyft decide in their bullying way that they're going to leave if Prop 1 doesn't pass, there are other companies that are ready to step in.
We've had them on the show. We had Get Me on the show.
Excellent. It's a lucrative market. It might be a little bumpy as we start it up, but
this is what happens when disruptive technology enters our lives. Yeah, and we are all better for it because it really pushes the envelope.
It makes us think a lot. But, I do think a conversation is happening.
But it also throws a lot of kinks into the public discourse.
And so really quick, I said we want to get to emblems really fast. Mm-hmm. Laura, start us off. What is the emblem requirement that if you were to vote against Prop 1 would be the new reality?
You will be required to have an emblem on your car that shows that you're a ride-hailing car. So it would be
like a sticker or
sticker in the window.
It's just called it's like the sticker or the
Lyft
pink
mustache
or something like that. Right.
Okay.
So that's one safety feature to be able to,
you know, what
make clear that that's a car that's coming up.
Is that something that could be replicated easily from a no-do-gooder?
Well, I suppose that if somebody wanted to go out and make a pink mustache or steal it from somebody else, but if I'm going to be concerned about that, I'd much rather look into, make sure that I have the person that applied for the license really is that person and doesn't have a a criminal conviction, and for that, you need fingerprints.
And here we were running short on time, but emblems on
very
the other
quickly.
Side.
Again, there's no empirical evidence that fingerprinting actually makes us safer. But more importantly, on the emblems, it's a false sense of security, because think about it. If it's a sticker with the Uber logo or the Lyft logo, it can be easily printed and duplicated. And why is it a false sense of security? Because before you get into the vehicle, you have to look at your app. And people who've actually used the apps understand what I'm talking about here. It shows you the picture, it shows you the name, and it shows you the license plate information of the vehicle that's coming. And you need to match the license plate and you need to match the face before you get into the car. The false sense of security arises when you see the Lyft sticker or the Uber sticker and you're like, oh, there's my ride. You hop in and you didn't even verify that that was your ride. That's why it's fundamentally unsafe and should not be made mandatory. Lyft sort of disagrees, actually, because they love their pink mustache. It's not
it's
because
part of their
safety.
Branding.
It's branding. It's not safety.
Okay, and so we are running very short on time now. Last word. So we're going to start with you, Laura. Give a website where people can get more information and then kind of sum up your position there.
Sure. You can go and get more information at our city, oursafetyourchoice.org. And I would encourage you to go take a look at all the supporters. We have over 20 community groups, including the League of Women Voters, the Austin Police Association, in addition to the Sierra Club and the Travis County Party. Talk about false sense of security. False sense of security is getting into a car when the person that is driving has been approved isn't even the person that was checked and was using an alias. And without fingerprints, you can't know that that's the person that was checked. And it's a much stronger, superior safety standard.
Thank
Laura,
you. And
thanks so much
Roy,
for
we're going to have Roy
by.
Come
thank
in.
You. And Roy.
Final words and how people can learn more about Austin Sierra Club.
Okay, you can visit our website at sierraclub.org/Texas/Austin. And we certainly hope that you will think very carefully about how you feel about the ordinances that are protecting your environment here in Austin and who you want to be writing those ordinances.
All right.
Thank you
Huey, so much,
Roy. Website and final words.
Yeah, if you want more information, you can check out voteprop1.org. Y'all, I'm supporting Prop 1 because it keeps me and my friends safe. It's completely changed the culture in this community, especially for young people and students. You know, why would we ever get in the car with a stranger if we didn't have strong senses of security, not only with comprehensive and modern background checks, but also with regulations that have really been working for the past couple of years? That's why the UT student government has endorsed Prop 1, and that's why we're I'm going to be voting for Prop 1. Thank
great.
You.
And as a reminder, the election is on Saturday, May 7th, as we said. Stacy, how can people get more information about Shades of Green?
That's right. You can find a podcast of our previous shows on our website, shadesofgreenmedia.com. And you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Our Twitter handle is at SOG Talk Radio.
Just real quick.
Uh-oh.
This isn't an age thing.
We told you he has to stop talking.
That's right.
Boy.
This isn't age. This isn't young against old. Our Young Sierrans group, and Dave Cortez, who's a great Sierra Club organizer, they are all saying vote against. So it's not young against
old.
So
regardless of
but
your age.
But when we look at the maps on on election day, we're going to see that students overwhelmingly are going to support Prop 1 because they understand what ride sharing is. They understand how it keeps us safe.
All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for coming.
Thank
Thanks
you.
So much.
Very
lovely.
Now the final great second.
All right, you're going to
You have been listening to Shades of Green, recorded live at KOOP 91.7 FM in Austin, Texas.